We love to explain quantum physics and the mysteries of the universe, but the mysteries of finance, not so much. Intuit helps you demystify your finances through products from Intuit like TurboTax, Credit Karma, QuickBooks, and MailChimp. Understanding standard deductions or interest rates can be very complicated and tricky, with big potential consequences. Intuit is the financial platform that helps everyday people prosper. Intuit has helped 100 million people live their best financial lives. Visit Intuit.com, I-N-T-U-I-T.com, to start living yours. Let's get into it.
If your business needs a new application, then developers will have to write code, a lot of code. If an application needs to be modernized, then you'll need time, resources, and caffeine. If that sounds daunting, then you need Watson X Code Assistant, AI designed to multiply developer productivity so you can generate code quickly. Let's create a more modern foundation for business with Watson X Code Assistant. Learn more at ibm.com/codeassistant. IBM, let's create.
What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casual and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
Life in our modern age comes at you pretty fast, which makes our time away especially valuable. When I take time to relax, I like to get far from my everyday life, immerse myself in natural beauty, and have unique experiences. But you don't have to leave the U.S. to experience tropical rainforests and islands filled with adventure, warm culture, and national treasures. Visit Puerto Rico, an island with a vibrant spirit that will sweep you away. Because when you visit, you don't become part of the island, it becomes part of you. In Puerto Rico, you can forget where you came from and embrace where you are. Puerto Rico, where visits end, but stories last forever. No passport required for U.S. citizens and permanent residents. Learn more and plan your trip at discoverpuertorico.com.
Hey, Daniel, I have a new idea for how to solve quantum gravity.
Oh my gosh, I'm so excited. I can't wait to hear it.
Okay, just take any everyday object and add the word theory to the end of it.
What? That's it? Like, how does that work?
You know, like string theory or loop theory? Boom, I've solved quantum gravity.
Those are already theories of quantum gravity.
Okay, there are other objects we can use, like table theory or rug theory or Pokemon theory. Boom, anyone can be a quantum gravity physicist.
Oh, I wish that's all there was to it.
Wait, there's more?
Physics isn't just about naming things, man. Though that is the hardest part.
Hi, I'm Jorge, I'm a cartoonist and the author of Oliver's Great Big Universe.
Hi, I'm Daniel. I'm a particle physicist and a professor at UC Irvine, and I hope that I'm around when quantum gravity gets figured out.
Well, that's a massive wish. It's a little bit heavy on the responsibility for a theorist.
I just want to be around so that I can hear what name you give it.
It feels a little lazy of you. You're like, I wish that somebody else would solve this problem for me. Why don't you just get down to it, Daniel, and solve it yourself?
Not my job, man. Not my job. I'm an experimentalist.
I thought you were a physicist.
There are different flavors of physicists, you know, and I'm an experimentalist. I go out and discover weird stuff nobody can explain. And theorist's job is to come up with ways to explain it.
I feel like you're letting these imaginary or artificial boundaries get in the way of your true dreams, Daniel. Like, imagine if a theorist said, oh, man, I wish I was an experimental physicist and could press buttons and stuff. Wouldn't you just be like, just press the button?
No, you're right. Those boundaries are artificial. Here in my department, we had a theoretical physicist who's now running his whole experiment. And last year, I wrote quite a few theory papers. So you're right. I'm cowering behind categories.
This could be you, Daniel. Just make up a theory and you can call yourself a theorist. Isn't that how it works?
Yeah, podcast theory of physics. Done.
Yeah, like what's the minimum, like in your department, is there a minimum number of theories you have to come up with to be a theorist or number of publications?
One, just one.
There you go.
You have to do it once.
You can be a theorizer today in this podcast. What's your theory of everything, Daniel?
Yeah, I think it's the chocolate theory of everything.
It's a dark theory. Or is it a white theory?
I hope it's not a white theory. Oh my gosh. I'd be so disappointed in the universe.
Turns out white chocolate is the secret to everything. And so you're going to just check out.
Sweet and bitter at the same time.
No, that's the whole point of white chocolate. It's not bitter. It's sweet for everybody.
White chocolate sweet, but I would be bitter if it was the answer to everything.
Just you, okay.
Just me.
But anyways, welcome to our podcast, Daniel and Jorge Explain the Universe, a production of iHeartRadio.
In which we do our best to understand this sweet, sweet universe without getting bitter about our favorite theories. We hope that everything that's out there in the universe, the tiny particles, the huge black holes, the swirling oceans of magma, all of those things can be explained, can be understood. And we try to talk about all of them here on the podcast, where our goal is to fit all of those theories into your brain.
That's right, because it is a sweet universe. It's also a sour universe, a bitter universe, and a salty universe, and a umami universe. It's got all the flavors of mysteries and unknowns and questions that we can ask of it. And here on the podcast, we sometimes try to answer those questions.
That's right. Like, string theory can explain the fundamental forces, but can it explain why people drink boba?
Because it tastes sweet, I guess. It's not bitter. It doesn't have umami, I don't think. It's chewy and delicious. I mean, what's not to like? Isn't that the whole point of the universe, to be chewy and delicious?
What's not to like? The feeling of choking as you're trying to enjoy a beverage.
I keep saying this, but I feel like you're not drinking boba correctly. Maybe somebody needs to show you the true theory of boba drinking.
No, I know how to drink boba. You take the boba, you throw it in the trash, and you move on with your life. Then you're done.
That's not technically drinking, Daniel. Maybe that's why you're not a theorist.
I've renamed drinking.
You don't know how to formulate theories.
I'm generalizing drink. I have a new theory of drinking. teach me a wise one.
I'm not sure how we got to bobas, but anyways, it is a wonderful universe full of interesting mysteries and lots of interesting questions that you can ask of it, and that anyone can ask of it, even our listeners.
Because science is not just about satisfying the curiosity of people who are paid to come up with theories or to do experiments or to fuzz those boundaries, but everybody out there. It's powered by human curiosity, this fundamental desire to understand the nature of the universe we live in, to make it make sense. And so we encourage everybody out there to ask questions about how the universe works, try to fit all those various pieces together into their mind, and when they don't make sense, to write to us, to questions@danielandjorge.com, where every question gets an answer.
That's right. Everybody has answers. And it seems like the more you learn about the universe, the more questions you have of it. And sometimes on this podcast, we like to answer some of those questions.
That's right. If you send me a question and I think, I bet a lot of people want to hear the answer to that one, then we'll play it for everybody on the podcast and even answer it.
So today on the podcast, we'll be tackling... listener questions, number 54. Is this like the Studio 54 version? Are we going to rock out and do a lot of drugs?
I hope you're wearing something appropriate.
Oh, yeah. No, I'm always fashionable, Daniel. You don't even have to ask.
Do you have your Studio 54 pajamas on right now?
I got my Studio 54 cargo pants on and my Studio 54 hoodie on. And what else do you need?
It sounds like you're kind of dressed the way you normally are.
Yeah, I live in the 80s. I live the glamour life of the 80s every day. Shouldn't we all?
You found the perfect uniform and you're sticking with it.
I stopped changing clothes in the 80s. Yes.
And now you literally couldn't get them off.
Once I like something, there's no need to change it, right?
That's right. And what I like are hearing questions from listeners, wondering what people out there do and do not understand about our universe. Sometimes people hear something on the podcast that doesn't make sense to them, then they write to me, or they read some other crazy article that doesn't quite fit in their brain, or they're just thinking deeply about the universe. Thanks, everybody who writes in with your questions.
Yeah, and so today we have three awesome questions from listeners. We have questions here about string theory, cosmic strings, and something that is not strings, but maybe alien.
Are you saying aliens couldn't be made of strings?
Well, I just don't want to string the listener along here and pretend that there's a connection between all of these questions.
We'll find it. We'll find the connection.
I'm sure there are aliens that use strings. I mean, they have to wear clothes, I guess, maybe.
Do they?
And for that, they need strings,
maybe,
right?
I don't know.
Yeah. Well, let's jump right into it, Daniel. Our first question comes from Bruce, and he has a question about string theory in the Big Bang.
Hello, Daniel and Jorge. Bruce LeBastard here from Langham, Saskatchewan, Canada. I was just wondering about string theory in the Big Bang. Is there any theories around string theory and the Big Bang? If I understand correctly, the specific vibration of the strings creates specific particles. I'm thinking on the frequency of the strings that are everywhere, changing to suddenly create the universe and the particles. Sort of like they decay down to the right energy level to create particles. Once again, you guys are awesome. Everything you do is great, and I look forward to your answer.
All right. This feels like taking two big questions and smooshing them into one ginormous question, or a little tiny question, depending on your perspective.
No, I think it's a really cool question. It's trying to understand whether string theory gives us an idea of where the universe comes from and how we all ended up where we are, hating or loving Booba.
Boy, you really have it against Booba. What did Booba do to you, Daniel? Did it actually try to choke you?
Yes, the first time I had Booba, I almost choked on one. Yes, absolutely. And I will never forgive it.
Well, it sounds more like user error here than fault of the product, to be
fair,
honest.
Fair. But, we're talking about quantum gravity. In the last episode we had about it, we interviewed Nathan, who likes Booba, even though his dad hates it. So that was just running through my mind.
I see. It's really stuck in your head here. But there's a connection, right? The Big Bang and Booba, and it's a little like fuzzy ball, right? At some point.
Yes, it's right? Dark, mysterious, and kind of dangerous.
And you can string Bobas along into make a Booba pearl necklace.
Booba's got two B's in it, just like the Big Bang.
I think Booba's one word.
It's got two B's in it, though.
Oh, I see. This word has two B's, just like these two other two words have two B's. Got it.
Exactly. Okay. Deep connections here. Yeah. Bruce is asking actually a deep question about the nature of the universe. He wants to know basically what happened before the earliest time that we can understand.
Yeah, and I think he's specifically asking whether, like, what's the connection between string theory and the origin of the universe? Like, we know about the Big Bang, and there's a theory called string theory. How does string theory factor into the Big Bang, or what does it say about the Big Bang?
Yeah, string theory, like all theories of quantum gravity, basically pick up where the Big Bang leaves off. And there's a common misconception about the Big Bang. People think of the Big Bang as the universe starting from a single point and all that stuff then exploding out through space. But modern conception of the Big Bang doesn't talk about the actual very beginning of the universe. It says the universe right now is kind of cold and old. It's very dilute, but we know it's expanding. And so if you wind the clock backwards, what happens if you unexpand the universe? It gets denser, things get closer together. It also gets hotter. And at some point, it gets so hot and so dense that our current theories, we don't think they'll work anymore. Because we have theories of general relativity that describe gravity in space and time. And we have theories of quantum mechanics that describes particles and all that fuzziness and uncertainty. And at some point when the universe gets dense enough, then both of those theories come into play. And we don't know how to fit those together. For that, we need a theory of quantum gravity. So the Big Bang takes us back to some very hot, dense state that's like the limit of our understanding, but doesn't actually say what came before that. Quantum gravity tries to explain what happens when things get that hot and dense, and so might give you some insight as to what came before the moment that we can describe up to the Big Bang.
I wonder if there's a sort of like a distinction you can make between these theories. Like, is string theory, or maybe just generally quantum theory, a theory of matter? And maybe general relativity is more of a theory about space and time.
General relativity is definitely about space and time, but it's also about matter and energy because it's about how all of those things interact with each other. String theory is really a unified theory because it involves gravity. It also involves the other forces. Like quantum mechanics can describe electromagnetism and the weak force and the strong force. In terms of quantum mechanical objects, these quantum fields and ripples passing through them, general relativity can't explain any of that stuff, but string theory can reproduce general relativity and the quantum theory. So it really is a union of these two things. It explains all of it together.
So string theory has things like this, the bending of space and the slowing down of time. All of that is baked into the theory, or did it just, it sort of like absorb general relativity?
Yeah, that's a great question. One issue with string theory is that there's a lot of string theories. Like if you start putting these things together and saying, look, the universe is made out of these tiny vibrating strings that vibrate in many dimensions more than the ones that we see. You get lots of different possible ways for those string theories to build a universe. And we know that some of those correspond to the universe that we live in. We don't know how many of them and why this one. There's a whole big question there about like why there are so many string theories. But it is possible in some versions of string theory to reproduce general relativity and quantum mechanics. And so that lets you go back further in time than our current theories, back to where the universe was so hot and so dense that you need that theory of quantum gravity.
So string theory does general relativity and quantum theory, but it's sort of not proven, right? It's just a sort of a theory, but it hasn't been confirmed yet.
It has definitely not been confirmed. It only describes things that we cannot yet test. We can't create those conditions higher than the Planck temperature, essentially, in order to test quantum gravity really yet. We had a whole episode about whether you could test quantum gravity with like tabletop experiments. There's some clever ideas there. But currently, string theory is just a theory of quantum gravity. Still got some mathematical issues. Also, we can't describe like dark energy and the expansion very well. But it does give you a cool picture of how the universe might work if it's correct.
Well, okay, so then it can do both things. Then what does it say about the Big Bang?
It says something pretty cool, actually. It tells you that the universe can't compress beyond a certain point. Like there's a minimum size to these strings. General relativity has no problem compressing the universe infinitely until every part of space is infinitely dense. But when you fold the quantum nature of these strings in and says, look, everything in the universe is made of these vibrating strings and they have like a minimum size, that tells you the universe could never have gotten denser than a certain level.
Wait, is that what it says? Or does it say that you can't have things that are smaller than that, but could the universe be smaller than the things it can have?
Ooh, wow, that's a deep philosophical question. So first of all, we're not talking about the size of the universe. We're talking about density, right? We're talking about the whole universe, which could be infinite anyway and could have always been infinite and could always be infinite. We're talking about changing from high density in the early universe to low density now. So it's really more about density than size. But on your question, I do think the universe has to be at least as big as the stuff in it.
Why can it be compressed more than the things that it can have in it? Like, for example, my car can be compressed smaller than what I can fit in it.
In order for something to be in the universe, it has to have a location in the universe, which means the distance from one side of it to the other side of it has to exist. So that space exists, and so that it's part of the universe. So therefore, the universe has to be at least as big as the stuff in it.
Why can it be smaller or more dense? Just like, why can my car be smaller than me?
Well, if your car was smaller than you, you couldn't get in it.
Yeah, but it'd still be a car. Like I could take my car and scrunch it down to the size of a basketball. It'd still be my car. I just couldn't fit in it. But it doesn't mean that it's not my car.
That's true. But the universe contains everything that's in the universe. And so if you're in the universe is at least as big as you are, even if your car has shrunk smaller than you are, right?
Well, it could still have me in it. I would just be squished to a pulp.
I see. Well, the thing about quantum strings is they think that there really is a minimum size there, like a quantum mechanical minimum beyond which you cannot shrink them. If you add another feature of quantum mechanics, which is time reversibility, that all the laws of physics seem to go equally well backwards and forwards in time, it naturally brings you to a bounce scenario, where the universe infinitely far back in time may have been infinitely dilute and that it gradually gathered together towards a hotter, denser state. And then when it reached the maximum density, it basically bounced back, expanding out again, and then expanding out again and creating our universe.
They call that the big bounce, right?
Yeah, that's like the big bounce. The big bounce comes in lots of different varieties, but some versions of string theory are very nicely compatible with this kind of big bounce. And it gives you a reason for the bounce, right? Why didn't the universe just keep compressing until infinite density and go on and on and on? The answer is strings pushed back. Strings have a minimum length, which means a maximum density. And that is where the bounce comes from.
Does that mean that the arrow of time continues beyond the Big Bang?
Yeah, it means that that earliest moment that we can describe with our current theories, that's what we typically describes the Big Bang, we could extrapolate back further to some higher density, but not infinite density, and then even back through that to when the universe is doing the inverse Big Bang.
Whoa. And was that universe kind of like a mirror image of our universe, just running backwards in time, or is it a totally different universe?
We think it should have the same laws of physics because it's built out of the same basic strings, but yeah, it's running backwards through time if you're thinking about it in that direction. Really, the way to think about it is to start deep in the infinite past, running forwards in time as that universe is compressing. So that'd be a very different universe to live in because that universe wouldn't be expanding like ours is. It would be shrinking.
And would it have the same things like dark energy, which is in our side of the universe mirror expanding the universe? Wouldn't it also have dark energy expanding it?
Well, string theory can't always accommodate or explain dark energy. So that part is still a bit of a question mark of where that comes from, where that shrinking and then expansion comes from originally. So that's still something to be figured out. As you can tell, this is all a little bit sketchy because string theory itself has so many varieties that there's like 1,000 different directions people are exploring it in. And so if you read up on like string cosmology, you'll see this scenario, but also like 500 other ideas for how strings could explain the Big Bang or what came before it.
Did you just call it extreme cosmology?
String cosmology.
Oh, string or extreme.
Yeah, it is pretty extreme also.
They both sound pretty exciting. it's string cosmology, not extreme cosmology.
Yeah, exactly. But, you know, Bruce is wondering, is it possible for those strings in the very early universe to decay down and create our particles? And the answer is yes, absolutely. If string theory is right, then the universe was much denser than even our quantum field theory of particles can describe, a moment when everything was these crazy bouncing strings.
And then those strings became quantum particles, and then those quantum particles became us. And then some of them became boba balls, which try to kill Daniel, apparently.
Unsuccessfully,
so far. So far. They'll get you yet, Daniel. They'll sneak up on you.
That's a horror movie right there. A man being followed by boba.
That would be scary for like three people, yeah. Including you, I guess.
But it is possible that we could one day do more than just speculate, because these theories do make some predictions. The very early universe, its expansion and all the dynamics are predicted to leave gravitational waves bouncing around the universe. These are called primordial gravitational waves. If those are there and we can pick them up and measure them, we could learn something about what happened in that early state before quantum field theory can describe, basically before the Big Bang.
Whoa. So I guess in this version, gravitational waves are not made out of particles then?
No, they're not boba particles or anything. They're real ripples in space-time. But these would be very, very subtle. There was an experiment a few years ago that claimed to have measured primordial gravitational waves, but it turns out they were just measuring dust. It's a hard problem.
All right, well, that's the answer for Bruce. What does string theory say about the Big Bang? It says that maybe the Big Bang just came from the Big Bounce.
Mm-hmm.
And that from that came quantum particles and quantum things, including quantum theories.
Extreme theories of the universe.
That's right. Extreme and string, both alike. All right. Thanks, Bruce, for that question. Let's get to our second question. This one is about cosmic strings, which has nothing to do with string cosmology.
That's right.
At all. It's a totally different thing. Super interesting. So let's get to that question. But first, let's take a quick break.
eBay Motors is here for the ride. Remember when you first saw the potential? And then through some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Look to your left, look to your right. It's official. No one's got a ride like this. There's nothing else that sounds like, feels like, or looks like the set of wheels in your garage. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly, so there's no limit to how far you can take it. Brake kits, turbochargers, engines, exhaust kits, roof racks, LED headlights, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, well, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
LASIK, LASIK.com.
Have a ton of questions about LASIK? You're not alone. That's why we created LASIK.com. one place where you can go to find every answer to every question on your mind. Like, how much does LASIK cost? How long does recovery take? How do I find a doctor? If you've been thinking about LASIK, go to LASIK.com now. Yeah, LASIK.com. Easy to remember, so you know where to start.
LASIK, LASIK.com.
What if AI could help your business deliver mission-critical outcomes with speed? With IBM Consulting, your business can design, build, and scale trusted AI using Watson X, and modernize the way you work to accelerate real impact. Let's create AI that transforms your business. Learn more at ibm.com/consulting. IBM. Let's create.
This episode is brought to you by Navy Federal Credit Union. At Navy Federal, it's been the mission to help the military community for over 90 years. And not just help them, but do everything to make sure they not only grow, but flourish. That's why Navy Federal Credit Union has all kinds of great savings and investment options, like share certificates with sky-high rates. So don't hesitate. Start growing your finances today with a variety of savings and investment options. Navy Federal Credit Union. Our members are the mission. Savings products insured by NCUA. Investment products are not insured, not obligations of Navy Federal and may lose value.
All right, we're answering listener questions here today. And our second question is pretty cosmic, dude. It's about cosmic strings, and it comes from Dane.
Hi, Daniel and Jorge. In articles about the newly discovered Big Ring megastructure, I've seen cosmic strings mentioned several times as a possible cause. If cosmic strings even exist, what happens when one intersects a black hole? Also, what happens when normal matter contacts a cosmic string? Is it pulled into the string? Is a cosmic string effectively a black line? Also, is there a stable orbital path around a string? If so, what would that be? A ring, a spiral or corkscrew, something else? Thanks for any clarification you can provide. I think cosmic strings are really weird.
All right, interesting question here. And again, cosmic strings have nothing to do with string theory.
Yeah, it's almost as if the names in physics are just not very well thought out.
A little bit. I mean, I've sort of been saying that for 5 years.
Yeah, I think you put it very well. Cosmic strings have nothing to do with string cosmology. Two totally separate questions.
But they could be related, right? Like, for example, string theory could account for cosmic strings, for example.
If string theory is correct, then it accounts for everything. So then, yes, cosmic strings are made out of tiny quantum strings.
Okay, it's like a string made out of strings.
Yeah, exactly. Like, if string theory is right, then the yarn that made your sweater is also made out of quantum strings. So you're wearing like a string theory sweater.
Right. But we don't know, I guess there hasn't been that connection yet, but cosmic strings is something that comes out of just general relativity, right?
Cosmic strings is an idea that does come out of general relativity, but it's also related to quantum mechanics. It has to do with how the universe is cooling and how the laws of physics and the sort of state of space itself changes and cracks as the universe cools.
Whoa. All right, well, maybe break it down for us. What is a cosmic string?
So a cosmic string is like a topological defect in space.
It's a theoretical concept, first of all, right? Like nobody's seen one. It's just something people think might exist out there.
Yeah, it's just an idea so far. It would be interesting because they're like a boundary. They're like a spot where space behaves differently. Not like the laws of physics themselves are different, but it's like space is in a different phase. If you think about the universe from the very initial days, things are hot and dense. You can use a sort of certain set of laws to describe it. The same way that you use like the ideal gas law to describe water when it's a gas, and you use fluid dynamics to describe it when it's a fluid, and you use like crystal theory to describe it when it's a lattice. Things are a different temperature. You have different effective laws that describe them. We think the universe is the same way. And as the universe cools, as things expand and get more dilute, different effective laws take over. And so the universe sort of has different phases.
Phases with a pH, right? Like phase, like solid or liquid.
Yeah, phases, not faces. I don't know if there are any faces in the universe except for the one on Mars. But yeah, we think about phases more generally than just like the phases of matter. Physicists think about them as like regions where your laws of physics are applicable, because there's always boundaries to where your laws work. Just like we were talking about how quantum field theory works up to a certain temperature and beyond that, it doesn't work anymore. So there's a phase in which you can talk about quantum fields, and beyond that, it's sort of nonsense.
And so the idea is that after the Big Bang, everything was super hot. and things kind of settle down. And like, for example, around us, the universe settle into a particular phase, like a particular set of laws or arrangement of the quantum fields. But maybe next door to us, a few thousand or bazillion light years away, maybe it started settling in a totally different set of laws or phase.
Mm-hmm, because as the universe cools, there's a few different ways that it could cool down. It's like a ball rolling down a hill, but that hill has interesting features in it. So maybe it gets stuck on a shelf, or maybe it goes all the way down to the valley.
And is there an infinite number of phases of the universe that the universe can be, or is there a like three or four?
Well, we don't really know. It depends on the nature of all those quantum fields. For example, we know that in our portion of the universe, we have not settled into like the lowest energy possible state of the universe. Some of the fields that fill space got stuck, like the Higgs field. The Higgs field has a lot of energy in it, and that's why we have mass. And when things interact with the Higgs field, there's a lot of energy stored in that field. It hasn't fully relaxed. And we talked about how if it did spontaneously collapse, that would change the nature of physics. It would lead to a new phase, essentially, of the universe in which the same fundamental laws might apply, but, you know, everything we've learned about atomic physics and chemistry and whatever wouldn't apply. So in our region of the universe, we're in a certain phase, like space is cooled in a certain way. Are there different options? We don't really know because we don't fully understand the nature of the Higgs field and the other fields that might be out there. Ones for dark matter, dark energy. There's lots of potential fields out there in the universe.
So there might be part of the universe out there beyond the observable universe, right? Because as far as we know, the observable universe is the same phase, right? I imagine.
As far as we can tell, the same laws of physics do apply everywhere in the observable universe. So yeah, most likely these things would exist past the observable universe.
Then the idea is that maybe beyond the observable universe, there's a, in the same universe, there's another phase expanding or growing or settling just like we are. And at some point they have to meet. And if they meet, is it like a big disaster, or can both types of universes coexist next to each other?
Well, the theory of cosmic strings is that they can coexist, and then you get this weird boundary, and that's the cosmic string. It's like a crack in space where the laws are different on one side and the other. These can be like two-dimensional, like a whole surface where the laws are different on one side and the other. They could even be like one-dimensional. That's where the idea of a cosmic string comes in. These like long, weird cracks in space where the laws are a little bit different, just in that like one femtometer wide cosmic string that could be like 90 billion light years long.
Well, I guess I'm thinking of like bubbles. Like if we're in a bubble and there's a bubble next to us where the two bubbles meet, you get a wall basically, right? Is that what we're talking about in terms of the interface between two phases? Like it could be a wall, or sometimes if you get like three bubbles, then you sort of get a line between the three bubbles. Is that what you mean by a string?
Yeah, here we're talking about a line, and the bubble analogy mostly works.
Okay, let's go with boba. We got three boba balls.
It's my mental kryptonite. I can't even think now. I'm just worried about choking the whole time.
Get over it, Daniel. It's the new thing.
I can't. That what roughly works, the boba analogy, but it is possible for space to crack as it's cooling in this sort of uneven way and create these one-dimensional ripples in space.
Whoa, what does that mean? Like, how can a string have two sides to it, right? Because if you're saying it's the intersection between two universes, like which side is what?
This scenario, we have like a cosmic wall, you have an interface between two portions of 3D space, but you can also get space just cooling in this way where you have a line that's a different phase and the rest of space is all the same. So it's like a tube of space that's different than the rest of it.
Oh, wait. Does a cosmic string is more like a cosmic tube?
Yeah, because it's not really one-dimensional. It's like one femtometer wide, but very, very long. So it's like a cosmic hair or something that's very, very long.
Whoa. And inside of that hair is a whole different universe.
Yeah, exactly. And they think that it's probably higher energy. The universe hasn't cooled in those places as much. It's like hotter and denser. So these things, if they exist, they are gravitational objects because they're immensely dense. They're basically stuffed filled with original primordial energy. Imagine like a tube of the original hot, dense universe that never cooled. It got like stuck at some hot, dense state and it's still around.
Like it somehow got trapped, right? Is that the idea? Like maybe like the universe started settling into our kind of universe all around it. And as those things grew, there's a certain amount of primordial energy got trapped and squeezed into basically a spaghetti.
Yes, exactly. Cosmic pasta.
Yeah, maybe that's a better name for it. Cosmic ziti. Or rigatoni? I don't know. Oh, no, wait. Bugatoni. That's the right? Right?
There you go.
That would be the right one.
Not an expert. Sounds good. All right. So now I think we're finally ready to answer Dane's question.
Oh, right. What was his question again?
What happens when a cosmic string hits a black hole?
Oh, okay.
He wants to throw that spaghetti against the wall.
I see. He wants to throw the spaghetti against like a meatball.
Yeah, and the short answer is we're not sure because cosmic strings are features of a kind of theory of quantum gravity because, as you hear, they're all about how quantum fields are cooling, but they also involve space. You know, you have energy density, deformation of space, and black holes are a feature of general relativity. They don't know how to talk to quantum mechanics, and so we're not exactly sure what would happen because we don't really have a full theory of quantum gravity that would explain how quantum fields behave near a black hole.
Well, I guess the question is, are they both even compatible? Like, does the theory that predict cosmic strings also predict black holes, or are they sort of mutually exclusive?
No, in the theory where you have cosmic strings, you also are allowed to have black holes, yes. But again, we don't know if cosmic strings are real. We could look for them with gravitational lensing, gravitational waves of their own, because we think they're dynamic. They can, like, wiggle and whip around and stuff. But, of course, we've never seen one.
Well, technically, we don't even know if black holes are real.
Yeah, technically that's true. There are some very compact, massive objects, but we don't know if they actually are general relativistic black holes or something else.
All right, well then what would happen if you have this crack, this spaghetti of super primordial energy hitting a black hole? Wouldn't the black hole just win?
Probably that's what would happen because black holes always win. I mean, they are event horizons, so cosmic strings, and a cosmic string is just like a tube of super high energy density. And so it probably just gets slurped up and make like a really monster black hole.
Or could the string maybe like slice the black hole apart? Is that a possibility? Like, because these strings aren't just sitting out there. They're also bending space and time around them, right? Like they're super extreme. I think we've talked about maybe like doing a loop around one of these and going back in time and things like that. Couldn't one of these strings just kind of like disrupt the black hole?
There's one way to theoretically go back in time, which involves doing orbits around an infinite string of cosmic dust, but that's a different kind of string. That's a third kind of string. But could cosmic strings slice a black hole in half? I don't think so, because cosmic strings are just energy density. Although they're energy density where the rules of the universe are in a different phase. Those quantum fields are still very, very high. But there's something about them that's preserving that. There's like a crack in space itself. There's an interface there that's keeping this from just like diffusing out into space. And so the rules are a little bit different, but my money would be on the cosmic string getting gobbled by the black hole. You never bet against the black hole.
But a cosmic string, isn't it super long? So would it just get split in half or what would happen? Or would it get disrupted by the black hole and then rejoin up again?
They can be super duper long, like maybe 100 billion light years. But if a black hole hits the middle of it, it would just start slurping it from both sides. It's like if you eat a piece of spaghetti from the middle, you can just slurp both ends in.
Oh, a cosmic string is a thing. Like it can move.
Yes. Yeah, they can whip around and slide through space, absolutely. And make gravitational waves, which is how we might one day be able to detect them.
It would slurp. Interesting. But isn't it like a feature of space?
Yes, but everything's a feature of space. You're a feature of space. I'm a feature of space, right?
Like, I guess, I mean, like, would it get slurred by the black hole? Like, can it move through space if it's a feature of space?
It can move through space the same way that we can, right? We're just like, our energy slides through the quantum fields that fill all of space. Cosmic strings can also move. So they're sort of like persistent in that way. They don't just diffuse out into nothing. They persist and move through space, keeping their structure.
All right, so then I guess that answers Dane's question. Your best guess is that the black hole wins. It slurps up the cosmic string like a string of bugatoni pasta.
That's right, because as dense as the cosmic string is, it's not dense enough to make its own black hole. And so it's probably less dense than the black hole, and that's why the black hole wins. And even if the cosmic string was dense enough to make like a black line of singularities, that would also just be a black hole. And black hole plus black hole means black hole.
It would be a black line or black pasta.
Squid pasta, cosmic squid pasta.
There you go. A new recipe for the universe. All right. Well, thank you, Dane, for that question. Now let's get to our third question. And this one is about Daniel's favorite topic, aliens. and also nano things. And so let's get to that question. But first, let's take a quick break.
eBay Motors is here for the ride. Remember when you first saw the potential? And then through some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Look to your left, look to your right. It's official. No one's got a ride like this. There's nothing else that sounds like, feels like, or looks like the set of wheels in your garage. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly, so there's no limit to how far you can take it. Brake kits, turbochargers, engines, exhaust kits, roof racks, LED headlights, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, well, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
LASIK, LASIK.com.
Have a ton of questions about LASIK? You're not alone. That's why we created LASIK.com, one place where you can go to find every answer to every question on your mind. Like, how much does LASIK cost? How long does recovery take? How do I find a doctor? If you've been thinking about LASIK, go to LASIK.com now. Yeah, LASIK.com. Easy to remember, so you know where to start.
LASIK, LASIK.com.
Before AI can help your business predict demand, accelerate growth, inform decisions, automate tasks, reveal insights, generate content, you have to trust it. Introducing Watson X Governance. Helping you govern any AI as data, models, and policies change so you can scale it responsibly. Let's create AI that begins with trust with Watson X Governance. Learn more at ibm.com/governance. IBM, let's create.
This episode is brought to you by Navy Federal Credit Union. At Navy Federal, it's been the mission to help the military community for over 90 years. And not just help them, but do everything to make sure they not only grow, but flourish. That's why Navy Federal Credit Union has all kinds of great savings and investment options, like share certificates with sky-high rates. So don't hesitate. Start growing your finances today with a variety of savings and investment options. Navy Federal Credit Union. Our members are the mission. Savings products insured by NCUA. Investment products are not insured, not obligations of Navy Federal and may lose value.
All right, we're answering listener questions here today. And our last question of the day comes from Aubie.
Hi, Daniel and Jorge. In trying to communicate with extraterrestrials, we'd need to demonstrate that our signals are intelligent. We can't broadcast, say, the speed of light or the ground energy of hydrogen using our preferred units, like meters per second or electron volts, because who's to say that ET doesn't measure speeds in quatludes per nano-nano? How do we then demonstrate in a unit-free or natural way that we know stuff?
All right, interesting question. I feel like this is a question about how to talk to aliens.
Yeah, basically, how do we convince aliens that we're smart, that we're here? How do you send a message to aliens that when they read it, they're like, oh, yeah, those guys know what they're doing, or there are even people out there?
Like, how do we pass the test? Like, if you want to talk math to aliens, I think obvious question is, like, what sort of units would you use, if you can? Are there, like, units that they would recognize?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a really cool question. There's a couple directions to go with this. Like, could you come up with numbers that don't need units? Are there physical numbers in the universe that are unitless? Because he's right, units are things we made up. You know, like the speed of light is 3 × 10⁸ meters per second, but that number, 3 × 10⁸, is only that number because of the length of a meter and the length of a second. If you change that to something else, the speed of light would be a different number. So you can't just send that number without explaining what the units are. The units are just something we invented, right?
Yeah, and I think we don't even know exactly what a meter is. Or it's like it's a little bit somewhat arbitrary or changeable.
It used to be that a meter was the length of some platinum rod in Paris, but then people finally realized that's ridiculous because Paris has different weather, and so the rod gets longer and shorter, and we all get like taller and shorter as that happens. Now they define the meter in terms of the speed of light, how far light goes in a certain amount of time.
even the units of time are also arbitrary, right? Like a second, mm-hmm. which is 1/60th of a minute and 60th of an hour and 1/24th of a day, that's arbitrary, right? Like we could have 24 hours in a day.
The units of time are arbitrary. You're absolutely right. We just made them up. But they are also physical. Like we define the second in terms of oscillations of an atom. And when an atom oscillates a certain number of times, we call that a second. That's a new definition of a second. So one approach to making something universal is to say, let's just get rid of units altogether. And we can talk about that. The other approach is to make the units physical and say, like, look, here's a very natural choice for a clock. Let's use that as our definition of time and hope the aliens follow along. That's actually what Carl Sagan tried to do on the Pioneer plaque. This plaque that went on the Pioneer probe and was sent out into deep space and is right now zooming out towards aliens.
Yeah, I think that was in that movie Contact too, wasn't it? Like they used the hydrogen atom as a sort of like baseline and you make a drawing of the hydrogen atom and hopefully mm-hmm. the aliens will be like, oh, that's a hydrogen atom. And from there you can kind of figure out units of time and length.
Yeah, exactly. There's a spin flip transition. The electron has a certain spin and it can sometimes flip from one spin to the other spin. And it's a very well-known time from a very basic thing in the universe. Hydrogen is like most of the universe. So if you can somehow describe hydrogen and describe this spin flip and communicate to the aliens, like, look, can we all agree that this is a basic unit of time? Then you can start to talk about things that take time. And then you can use like the speed of light. The speed of light helps you relate meters and seconds, right? It relates distance and time. And so from there, you could build up what you imagine would be maybe a universal set of units, one at least other science-minded aliens might understand.
Right, and that doesn't depend on the conditions of the hydrogen? Like if you hot hydrogen and cold hydrogen, they all have the same timing?
This is for an electron in the lowest state, but you know that's pretty common, and we think anybody who studies hydrogen is going to understand this transition. It's pretty well known. But, you know, there are a lot of assumptions there, like that the aliens are doing science, that they understand we're talking about hydrogen, that they think about time the same way we do. There's a lot of things built into that.
Right, right. But I think you were saying that, like, units is maybe not the biggest of our problems in communicating mm-hmm. with aliens.
Yeah, you could even get rid of units. And you could say, look, are there numbers in the universe that don't have units? And there are, absolutely. Like in our theories of physics, there are numbers that define the theory that if you change those numbers, you get a different description of the universe. And those numbers don't have any units to them. Like they're just pure numbers. And so if you wanted to communicate to aliens that were also doing physics the way we were, then you might want to communicate those numbers. And an example is like the cosmological constant, which we think is what's controlling the expansion of the universe. That's a number. We can measure it. It doesn't have any units.
It doesn't have any units because it's like a ratio of something, right?
Like any number that doesn't have units, you can calculate them from ratios. But most naturally, they're just numbers. You know, like other examples of things are like the coupling of particles to other particles. These are just numbers that go in our quantum field theory. They don't have units to them. Like every particle that gets mass from the Higgs, there's a number associated with that particle and it controls how much mass that particle gets. That's just a number. Like the top quark has a number, the bottom quark has a number, the electron has a number. It's just a pure number with no units whatsoever.
Is it kind of like pi, which is, you know, like a feature of geometry?
That's another great example. You could use the number of spatial dimensions. That's a pure number that describes our understanding of the geometry of the universe. Pi is another great one because pi is a ratio that works in flat space. Right? Like if you live in curved space, the ratio between the radius and the circumference of a circle actually isn't pi. So there are these numbers that are special, that are important to the understanding of the universe that don't have any units at all. You could try to communicate those. But even still, as you were saying, you have a problem. Like, how do you communicate numbers to a bunch of aliens?
Well, I would imagine maybe you like use one finger for one. Like, if there are aliens living in the universe, they're probably familiar with the concept of a unit, right? Like one, two, three, and then you build up a number system from that, right?
I think Avi was not talking about aliens that have arrived here on Earth that we're interacting with, and we can, you know, point to apples and say one apple, two apples, three apples. But communicating with extraterrestrials, like broadcasting a message. The way that we have done and the way that like the Pioneer plaque is like, how do you build this in and send it out to the universe so it can be understood without us? so that somebody out there getting that message would be like, oh, look, there's smart people over there.
Like how do you basically communicate in Morse code kind of?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. How do you encode a signal? So if you're sending radio waves to the universe, how do you modulate the frequency or the pulses or whatever to send a message that indicates, look, we're smart physics people over here. We don't know how to name anything, but we are making some progress in understanding the universe.
Wasn't that in the movie Contact too? I feel like we're referencing this movie a lot, but wasn't that part of like the signal we got from aliens? Like there was a certain number of pulses and the mm-hmm. number of pulses followed mm-hmm. the digits of pi or something mm-hmm. like that.
Yeah, absolutely. And you're touching on the core issue, which is in the end, any message you send is symbols like pulses or digits or wiggles or whatever. They only represent the pure idea. There's a connection between the idea in your head and the idea in these symbols, but the symbols themselves are actually kind of arbitrary. You come up with lots of different ways to encode the same idea. And in order to decode it, to look at the symbols and have the idea in your mind, you need to have some commonality. You need to have some frame of reference to say, oh, maybe this is how they're doing it. Which is why it's so challenging to look at the sky and understand whether there are signals from aliens, because there's so many different ways they could encode it or represent it. We might just be totally missing it.
Well, I feel like Abhi's question has maybe two dimensions to it. Like one is, how do we just demonstrate that we're smart and that we know stuff about the universe? And the other one is like, how do you actually like have a conversation about physics with an alien? Like if you just wanted to demonstrate like, hey, we know math and we know things about the universe, like you could just send the digits of pi as pulses and somebody would have to interpret that as saying, wait, this is not a random sequence of pulses. This is a sequence of pulses that follow the digits of pi.
But you'd also have to figure out how to encode digits. Like how do you represent different digits in terms of pulses? That right there is an encoding scheme, and that's going to be cultural. That's going to be symbolic. That's going to be fundamentally arbitrary. So you have to do it in a way that you think they could reverse engineer.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Because you're saying like the digits of pi assumes mm-hmm. a base of 10. Maybe the aliens are doing base 50.
Yeah, so how do you send the number 4, right? You break it down into binary, all right? But, you know, you're assuming that they understand that they know what a 1 is and a 0 and all this stuff.
Well, if you send 4 pulses, wouldn't that be 4 in any number system?
Yeah, if you're counting the pulses and that's the way you're representing it. You're talking about like a unary number system, you know, where you just have like one digit. And that's cool, but then they have to know to interpret your message that way, that it doesn't mean something totally different, right? If you know that what system somebody is using, it's not so hard to decode their message. But if you have no idea, then you don't know. We actually talked to a philosopher on the podcast like a year ago who argued that it's probably impossible without any cultural context to know for sure what aliens are saying. You might get a message and decode it, and you don't have no idea what they're trying to say, so you have no idea whether you've done it right. You could be lucky and be like, oh my gosh, I'm guessing this encoding, and it turns out to give me all the digits of pi, that must be right. That would be a cool experience. But you essentially have to randomly guess how they're encoding their message, or in reverse, they would have to guess ours.
I see. Yeah, because I guess even 3, 1, 4, 1, 5, whatever, mm-hmm. the digits of pi, that's only those numbers if you're using the same base 10 system that we do, right? Like pi in binary is totally different.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, so then what's the answer for Abhi? It's hopeless? Forget about it?
The answer is that it's not hopeless if we have a lot in common with the aliens. I mean, if there are human-like aliens doing human-like science in a human-like way, then we can just send them a text, basically, and they'll get it and understand it.
They'd be like, who this? New number.
Yeah. The more we have in common with them, the easier it is for them to understand us and for us to understand them. The real question is, how much in common do we have with them? The most interesting aliens are the ones that have the least in common with us, that have like evolved in some weird situation or doing science in some totally different way, not even using mathematics or something. Those would be the ones we could learn the most from about the universe. But those would also probably be the ones it's hardest to make contact with, because they have different fundamental assumptions about how to communicate and what encoding systems work and whether they even use language, you know?
Well, I mean, that's sort of maybe according to you. Maybe somebody else might argue that those are the least useful aliens to talk to. Mm-hmm. Like maybe the more mm-hmm. useful aliens to talk to might be the ones that we do have things in common with.
Yeah, the ones that we have the most in common with will definitely have fun stuff to talk about. That philosopher we talked to about that scenario said you have to be careful, though, because almost anything you say could be interpreted as aggression and the aliens could launch first strike. So the best thing to do in that scenario is not to talk to aliens.
Oh, boy. I feel like now you're getting into, like, cosmic paranoia and the whole, like, you know, three-body problem of creatures in the forest scenario.
Yeah, it's a real concern.
Which sounds like a whole different thing, yeah. Which maybe goes outside of Abhi's question.
That's true, yeah. Maybe Abhi is not being responsible and just thinking, I'm going to broadcast messages to aliens and I don't care if they want to kill us or not. But in that scenario where you don't worry about deathly aliens, then you should try lots of different schemes. You should talk to people from different cultures and have different ways of encoding it and representing it, hoping that one of them will overlap with the aliens. I think the best shot is to use numbers without units because those are the ones that are the most universal, we think at least.
Like we talked about, even if they don't have units, you don't know if you're using the same base numbers, right?
Yeah, no, absolutely. There's always going to be a challenge there for how you represent those numbers in your message. But if they think similarly to us, maybe they'll unpuzzle it. You know, if there are smart enough aliens out there, they might figure out how to crack the human code.
Well, I guess I wonder if you can make an argument for like digital being maybe the one with the biggest shot at being universal. Like here on Earth, we had base 10, other bases, but ultimately we had to build computers. We built them out of binary.
Those are sort of most natural for us because they represent the states of the electronics on which our computers are built. Yeah. Aliens could have like quantum computers as their first computing, right? You never know. In which case, binary doesn't really make sense.
All right. Well, I guess then the answer for Abhi is there isn't maybe a good way to do this to broadcast our intelligence, but that maybe doesn't mean that we shouldn't do it, right?
Yeah, absolutely. We can broadcast things in a way that makes sense to us and hope that somebody out there gets it and hears our message and knows that we were, for at least a little while, here, wondering about the universe and surviving Boba.
So we could be like, we'll just speak English, let everyone else figure it out. It's very American.
That's basically the approach, yeah.
All right, well, thanks, Abhi, for asking that question, and thanks to all of our question askers here today. I guess that there's no end to human curiosity.
For which we are eternally grateful. So if you are a curious person with questions about the universe, don't be shy. Write them to us to questions@danielandjorge.com.
All right. We hope you enjoyed that. Thanks for joining us. See you next time.
For more science and curiosity, come find us on social media where we answer questions and post videos. We're on Twitter, Discord, Insta, and now TikTok. Thanks for listening, and remember that Daniel and Jorge Explain the Universe is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows. Life in our modern age comes at you pretty fast, which makes our time away especially valuable. When I take time to relax, I like to get far from my everyday life, immerse myself in natural beauty, and have unique experiences. But you don't have to leave the U.S. to experience tropical rainforests and islands filled with adventure, warm culture, and national treasures. Visit Puerto Rico, an island with a vibrant spirit that will sweep you away. Because when you visit, you don't become part of the island, it becomes part of you. In Puerto Rico, you can forget where you came from and embrace where you are. Puerto Rico, where visits end, but stories last forever. No passport required for U.S. citizens and permanent residents. Learn more and plan your trip at discoverpuertorico.com.
Need an easy button to feed your baby? Baby Brezza's Formula Pro Advanced makes a perfectly mixed warm formula bottle automatically at the push of a button. No air bubbles, no fuss. Literally, choose your temp, select your ounces, push start, and you're done. Works with virtually all formulas and bottles. Say goodbye to the 3 a.m. feeding chaos and hello to this revolutionary stress-free solution. Raising a baby is hard enough. Let Baby Brezza make feeding a breeze. Get your Formula Pro Advanced at babybrezza.com.
This summer, click into cordless power with Memorial Day savings at the Home Depot. Tackle more than half an acre of grass with the convenience and gas-like power of the Ryobi 40-volt battery-powered mower. And keep your flower beds looking fresh with the 40-volt cordless string trimmer. Then clear leaves and debris with the 40-volt leaf blower. No cords, no gas, no hassle. Click into Memorial Day savings happening now at the Home Depot and on HomeDepot.com. How doers get more done.